And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today was written by Virginia Mazur and is entitled A Different Sameness.
My father was a school teacher. He used to quote the Talmud, saying, The world rests upon the breath of the children in the schoolhouse. I'm a teacher, too. Fifth grade in a public school in East Harlem. One of my pupils is Cynthia Larkin. I sit at my desk now checking her answers to a personality test the class took today. Question, what do you expect to be when you grow up? Answer,
what do I expect to be? Well, I'd like to be a school teacher, but I expect I'll be on a leaf like my mama.
Poor world. Poor sad world. Resting upon the skinny shoulders, the frail hopes of Cynthia Larkin. But if I succumb to despair sometimes, Cynthia does not. Cynthia is 11 years old, small for her age, but quick and lively. A face like a bright new penny. Her IQ is 121, but she's 2 years below her reading level. There are no books in Cynthia's house, no magazines. The TV is broken. She is one of six brothers and sisters. Her father is gone. Where he has gone, the school record doesn't state. The family lives on relief and money the eldest boy earns at a car wash.
My brother's 17. He quit school. He said it was a bum kick. Now he's waiting to get in the army, if the army'll have him.
Cynthia is an inveterate talker, as well as an inveterate rope jumper, and pencil sharpener and blackboard wiper.
Look, Miss Sussman, I got off every single scrap of that nasty picture Jimmy Marble drew.
Good, Cynthia.
Now I'm going to straighten up the bookshelves.
But, Cynthia, it's 4 o'clock. Maybe you should start for home.
In a little while I'll start. Look, Miss Sussman, look what Jimmy Marble done now.
Did now? What is it, Cynthia? What did Jimmy do?
Look at this book. He went and drew all over George Washington's face.
Oh.
He made him look like Frankenstein.
Good heavens, and it's one of our brand new books. Why do you suppose Jimmy did that?
I think he don't like George Washington.
Doesn't. But tell me something. Why do you think Jimmy Marble doesn't like George Washington? Cynthia?
You're going to get mad if I say it.
No, I won't. Tell me.
Honest?
Honest.
It's because George Washington is a white man. Jimmy Marble don't like any white people.
Oh.
None at all.
And what about me?
He thinks you're better than the one we had last year.
Well, how do you feel about white people?
My mother says we have to love everybody. But my brother says, don't ever trust whitey.
And what do you think?
I don't know. I'll just have to wait and see, I guess. So far, I like you okay.
Oh, that's the last bell, Cynthia. You'd better start for home.
Miss Sussman, I'm scared to go home.
Why, Cynthia?
I've got to go past that block where those mean old boys live. They'll get me.
What do you mean they'll get you?
They're always chasing after little girls. They got Juanita Wilcox. And she's just 9 years old. Nobody can find her nowhere. She's gone.
But didn't anyone call the police?
No, ma'am.
Why not?
Her mama's dead. She lived with a big sister. Her sister said maybe she's just staying at a girlfriend's house. She say wait and see. You see, her sister don't want to call the police because she is a junkie, and she's afraid they might lock her up in jail.
Cynthia, I think this is all a lot of nonsense. You're just getting yourself all worked up over Juanita. Little girls don't just disappear.
You can think that way if you want to, but Juanita Wilcox is gone, and I'm scared.
All right, get your coat. I'll walk you home. And tomorrow you get started earlier.
I gotta go way uptown. You gotta go way downtown.
Never mind, it's only a few blocks out of the way. Let's get started, though. We walk out into the mean streets of East Harlem. Cynthia insists on carrying my briefcase. Behind us lies a shimmering world of glass and aluminum skyscrapers floating upon the horizon like a city seen in dreams.
Jimmy Marvel says they got a place he can walk in and see himself on TV, and it don't cost a thing, not a penny.
We march resolutely northward into the heart of the ghetto, into this festering wound on the city's conscience. The streets teem like a giant antheap. 4,000 people to a block. 6 and 8 people to a room. Old law tenements rubbing shoulders with decayed brownstones. Pawn shops and liquor stores with beckoning neon signs. Not a tree. Not a blade of grass. Just people. And skinny cats prowling among the rotting garbage in alleyways.
One day, I picked myself up a pussycat and took him home. He was gold color with stripes running round and round. And he was half starved to death. But Mama said, no, you gotta turn him loose. Cats around here ain't like other cats. They're wild cats. So I turn him loose again.
We pass the house where the bad boys live. A decrepit rooming house with a half-dozen teenagers lounging on the top steps and an old man in a drunken stupor on the bottom. One block left and another block right, and we're at Cynthia's. A 3-story brownstone with broken cornices and peeling paint. A second-floor window opens and a dark face peers out, surrounded by 4 smaller faces.
Cynthia, what do you mean coming home so late, honey? You had me worried. Who that lady with you?
I'm Cynthia's teacher, Mrs. Larkin. I walked her home.
Well, thank you for your trouble.
Oh.
Come on, I've been a while.
Well.
I've got some coffee boiling on the stove, and you're welcome.
Up the dark and rancid staircase we go. The odor of garbage and broken plumbing mingling with the smell of frying onions. Cynthia's mother is waiting to welcome us to her kitchen. The heart of the house. An ancient icebox and stove, some cast-off chairs, and a table with one leg propped up by a Sears Roebuck catalog. This is home. Not one single thing of beauty. Except a spindly geranium on the windowsill, struggling to live.
See my flower? I found it in the trash can outside the florist.
That's a geranium, honey. Cynthia don't know the name of any flowers, Miss Sussman. It worries me.
Oh.
Why would I learn the names of something I ain't ever seen?
When I was her age, I knew them all. Forsythia, Hyacinth, Jonquil, Begonia, Jack in the Pulpit, Lily of the Valley, Rose of Sharon. Oh, I'm telling you, this ain't no fit place for a human being to grow up in. Once a butterfly flew in the window and brushed against Cynthia and she screamed. She ain't never seen a butterfly before, so she was scared.
You weren't born in New York, Mrs. Larkin?
No, miss. I'm from down south. Down round Selby. Did you ever hear tell of Selby, Georgia?
No, I don't believe I have.
Well, it's just a wide place in the road, that's all. My folks were sharecropping there, but then came the Depression, and we was about to starve to death on the land, so we came up here. I was just about the size of Cynthia when we came, but I remember Selby real good.
Tell about the little place you had in the woods, Mama, and the water bubbling out of the ground.
Oh, it wasn't much of anything. But even after all these years, I remember it. All around us was cotton. Nothing but cotton. We'd be up with the sun, children, everybody, and out to the field. Up and down those roads all day long, dragging those sacks behind us. And hot? You don't know how what hot is till you've worked in cotton. Well, Come noontime, the rest of the family would stop and sit down right in the middle of the road and eat the food. But me, seemed like I had to get away from that cotton field, even for a little while. So I found me this little place back in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
A little grove of pines growing in a kind of a circle. On the ground underneath, pine needles for a bed. And in among the pine needles every now and then, you'd come up on violets growing.
Oh, my.
White violets. One day, when I'm laying there on my back looking up the sky, I hear kind of a murmuring noise like water running. I got up, and I walked just a little way into the woods. And it begins to get wet under my feet, and all of a sudden, I come out on this little spring, bubbling up out of the ground. First, I dip my hand in it, being careful not to muddy it up.
Yes.
Then I lay down on my face, and I drink, and I drink the coldest, sweetest water you ever tasted.
Oh.
Sometimes now I dream about that water.
Oh, I wish I could go down to Selby and have me a drink out of that little spring.
Oh, it's probably all dried up by now, honey. Besides, that spring wasn't all there was to Selby. There were other things I've had to put clean out of my mind, like pulling down a shade.
It's the rush hour by the time I leave Cynthia's house, and I can't find a seat on the downtown express. I am trampled on, squeezed, pushed, yelled at, kicked. But for me, this is only an interlude. In a little while, I can close the door on it and be alone in my own place with my books, my records. But what is it like, I wonder, to live your whole life among crowds? With no more dignity than a herring in a barrel.
Yes, stop 14th Street. Change here for BMT trains to Canarsie and Brighton Beach Line. Watch your step. Watch your step. Watch the doors.
It's raining a mean March rain when I get off at 14th Street, but in the florist's shops along Lexington, it's spring. On an impulse, I buy a pot of hyacinths. It's Friday night, and Mama's coming to dinner. She's a buyer for a children's shop in the Bronx, and since Papa died, she's had her own apartment. But each Friday night, we eat together. First at her house, and then at mine. More coffee, Mama?
No, thanks. No more coffee, Sylvie. I have to watch my blood pressure.
Mm.
Your cooking is getting better.
I got most of it at the deli. I was late. Walked one of my pupils home.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't. Those awful streets, it's dangerous.
Oh, Mama.
Why can't they give a young girl like you a job in a decent neighborhood?
I like it where I am. This kid, Cynthia,
You're
is...
You're just like your father. Broke his heart over a bunch of slum kids for 25 years, and where did it get him? You can't solve the problems of the world. Oh, where'd you get the lilies? Mmm, do they smell good?
They're hyacinths. You know... Cynthia's mother, where I was this afternoon, she had a geranium on the windowsill. That awful room. And that poor, tired, spindly geranium fighting for its life. Mama, it broke me up.
My mother was like that.
Grandma Simon?
That's right. You should have known her. She was crazy over any kind of growing thing. All the windowsills were jammed with flower pots. My father said they sucked up all the oxygen out of the air.
Oh. How did she get that way? Being so crazy about flowers. I mean, if she grew up on Hester Street working in a sweatshop.
Oh, I guess it was because of all those summers she spent in the country when she was a child. They made a big impression on her.
Where in the country?
Oh, somewhere in Pennsylvania, I think.
How could they afford it?
Those fresh air camp people arranged it. You see, Mama was a weak one of the family. Had scarlet fever when she was a kid. You don't know what it was like on the east side in those days. No ice, no running water, the dirt, the smells. Ugh. No wonder children died like flies.
So the fresh air camp people arranged to send Grandma away? How did they know about her?
Well, through the visiting nurse, I guess. Or maybe her teacher. She went for 3 or 4 years to the same farm. She used to tell us stories about it, learning to milk a cow, riding on a hay wagon.
Mm-hmm.
After she was married and had the six of us, she still used to write to the people who'd taken her in.
Oh, so it does matter.
What?
People. What they do. How they feel about each other.
Well, I suppose. But can't break your heart. One person can't change the world. I wish you'd cut your hair, Sylvia. Bouffant. Now, you know, that'd be good on
you. You know, Cynthia's height-weight chart shows that she hasn't grown a single inch or gained 1 ounce this entire year.
Cynthia, I wish you'd think about yourself for a change.
Mama, I do most of the time. I'm just like everybody else. I like to be safe and tidy. But if we all keep on feeling that way, the world will shrivel. I mean, it'll just shrivel. And we'll shrivel with it. You and me too, Mama.
Hi, Miss Sussman. Hey, guess what? Mama's geranium has a whole lot of new leaves.
Oh,
she's going to make a cutting and root you a little plant. And I'm going to bring it to school and put it in the window.
Oh, Cynthia, that's wonderful. But listen, you go sit down now. It's time for class.
All right, but I have to tell you one more thing.
What?
They found Juanita up on the roof. She was all beat up to a pulp.
Oh.
Blood all over and her head bashed in.
Oh.
And she was dead.
The world rests upon the breath of the children in the schoolhouse. Too late for Juanita, beaten to death on a tenement rooftop. But what about Cynthia? What about Cynthia Larkin?
Hi, Mom.
What are we having? It smells good.
Pot roast, and it's almost done. Just another 10 or 15 minutes for the potatoes to brown.
Ooh.
You look tired.
I am a little. You mind if I turn that off?
Sometimes I wish you'd gone to secretarial school instead of teacher's college and had a good paying job in one of those big air-conditioned offices midtown where there are a lot of lively young people.
And had a bouffant hairdo and wasn't always worrying about a kid named Cynthia. Mama, I wouldn't be me.
I like you the way you are. You're a good girl.
Oh.
Oh, I found something you'll be interested in.
What?
It was in a shoebox of things I stuck away when we moved. Here, take a look at this.
Who? Whose picture is it?
Turn it over. Read what's written.
Rose Simon, age 12, Sherman, Pennsylvania, August 1877. It's Grandma. Is it Grandma?
Is it a scream?
Oh, Mama.
That mini blouse and those high-top shoes.
And the pitchfork. She's holding it like a shield.
That must have been taken the first summer when she went with the Fresh Air Camp kids.
Oh, Sherman, Pennsylvania.
That's the name of the place. I couldn't think of it the other night. Oh, yes, and there's something else, too. A letter. But be careful with it. It's all ready to fall apart.
Oh. Dear Mama and Papa, it is nice and cool here in the country. Today, the men were getting in the hay, and I had a ride on the hay wagon. I found a nest with three blue eggs in it. Robin's eggs, Mrs. Gibson says. She has a beautiful garden. I help her water it. And I can pick as many flowers as I like. They have beautiful names. Aster, Daisy, Heliotrope, Larkspur, Pansy, Blue Bonnet, Delphinium, and Rose. Rose. I never knew my name was a flower name before. I miss you and Papa and the children, but I do not miss the dirt and the noise and the bad smells. When I come back, I suppose it will be the same. But I will remember the summer, and the sameness will be a different sameness. Your loving daughter, Rose Simon. Rose Simon, 1877. Cynthia Larkin, 1967. There is a connection. It spins out over the whole 90 years, frail as the thread of spider weaves, strong as the bonds of love. The connection must not be broken. Promise anything for sure, Mrs. Larkin, but it looks hopeful for Cynthia. And I've been asking around, and there are various groups in the city who send children away to the country.
Free? It would have to be free.
Free, of course. Now, I've been in touch with the Fresh Air Camp people. They're one of the oldest groups in New York. In fact, my grandmother was a Fresh Air Camp child.
Your grandmother? She was Pole, like us?
Like you.
And yet you grew up to be a school teacher.
All the same, Cynthia. The Fresh Air Camp people have two programs, you see. One is to send children to live in people's homes in the country. Mm-hmm. But there's another one, to send them to camps which they run themselves.
Camp, that's what I want, to go to camp. I want to swim in a lake and dive off a diving board and row in a rowboat and...
Just hold your horses a minute there, honey, and let the teacher talk.
Well, as I said, I can't promise you anything for sure. I mean, there are lots more children wanting to go than there are places for them, you know. But if you apply at once, I think Cynthia has a chance. I really do. And I'll tell you where to go and whom to see.
All right.
Miss Sussman, will it be all colored at the camp? Or will there be white kids, too?
Oh, it'll be mixed, white and colored.
And we'll eat at the same tables? And sleep in the same tents? And swim in the same water?
Of course.
Suppose they don't like them. The kids, I mean. Suppose they don't like me.
Well,
my brother said you can never trust any whitey. He'll get you every time.
Now, that's no way to talk, honey, when teacher's trying to be so nice to you.
Cynthia, I think after you've lived a few days at camp, you'll forget all about color. It won't be any more important than how tall you are or how short. And I think you'll find out that maybe your brother is wrong.
Amen.
The world rests upon the breath of the children in the schoolhouse. The world rests upon the breath of Cynthia Larkin.
What do I expect to be when I grow up? I'd like to be a school teacher, but I expect I'll be on relief like my mama.
We can't change the world. We can't tear down the tenements and raise the slums. But any one of us can open a door for one human being. We can open a door and show a path leading out and beyond the city's brown stone wasteland and beyond the rancid hallways and festering alleys into the sunlight, into the summer.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 25 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York, New York, 10027. And now we take great pleasure in presenting the Honorable James H. Scheuer, Member of Congress, 21st District of Bronx, New York. Congressman Scheuer.
More than 70 years ago, Oscar Wilde wrote, "Flowers are common in the country, as people are in London." He was right then, of course, and one wonders what he would have written if he could have seen New York City today. Perhaps even Oscar Wilde would have been struck speechless. Somehow or other, though, we have got to merge green open spaces and people. We have got to get together, country and city. Adults, of course, love the repose of the country. They love the recharging of their batteries, which relaxing on a green field can give them. But, of course, it's our children who most urgently need the soft magic of a summer breeze on a green hilltop, who need to race across an open field without ever running into a fence, who need to be engulfed in the sweetness of fresh-mown hay, who need to know the taste and smell of a tomato fresh picked off the vine. Congress has tried to meet this need by passing the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965, an act which permits local schools to design programs suited to the special needs of disadvantaged kids, of city kids who've never seen a cow, a field, or a gushing stream. Right now in New York City, the Board of Education of our city is running a project which brings some 35,000 of our city students to nature, to the High Rock Nature Conservation and Center in Staten Island. The program is running year-round and permits kids from public, private, and parochial schools to get out into nature and to learn and to love the green, the wonder, the awe of nature. As many as 300 students a day visit the center, receiving classroom instruction on the need for conservation of our green open spaces and our natural resources, and learning of the relationship between wise conservation and planned community growth. And most important, of course, the kids get outside. They get away from the concrete, steel, and asphalt jungle. They have a chance to enjoy the wide open spaces. The program is small when compared to the need, but at least it's a start and a possible model for more programs of a similar nature. Just as important as a city child getting to know nature is bringing the flower to him, where he lives, where he studies. Not only in our city parks and gardens, but in smaller ways. Can't we bring plants and flowers to the classroom? Can't we bring plants and flowers to the home? A geranium made a world of difference to Cynthia. Think what a million geraniums could do for our millions of slum kids.
Thank you, Congressman Scheuer. Our Eternal Light program today, A Different Sameness, was written by Virginia Mazur. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured today was Donna Babbs as Cynthia, Helen Martin as her mother, Joan Loring as the teacher, and Ethel Owen as her mother. Also heard was Gilbert Mack. We invite you to join us next week when the Eternal Light will present Cantillation, Interpreter of the Bible, written by Mark Siegel. This is Jerry Damon. The Eternal Light, produced for NBC by Rhoda Grady, is directed by Kenneth McGregor. For the seminary, Dr. Ben Zion Boxer of the Forest Hills Jewish Center is program editor, Milton E. Krentz, producer, and Ruth Sussman, program coordinator. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.